Hey there, Alex.
Hi, John.
You know what I hate?
I don't know. What's that, John?
Alien Covenant. No, that's the new one. Crap. Let me start that again. I haven't seen it. Hey, Alex.
Hi, John.
You know what I hate?
Yeah, Alien Covenant. You just told me.
No, I meant to say Alien Resurrection.
Oh, yeah. Hey, John, you know what's interesting about that?
What's that?
Yeah, it turns out I fucking hate this movie, too. What's this thing before me? From the depths of space. Blue and green and slimy. It ain't got no face. On the speakers, whisper in my ear. Wanna be a lover. Wanna be a lover. Before we get into any discussion of the movie, I want to defend myself for my comments from last episode. Here's what happened. I got this movie confused with part three. As I was watching it, because I remember I said it was the Whedon-esque stuff. I remembered the guy showing up on the ship, like the kind of Serenity crew.
Mm-hmm.
But then it went into like a weird lava thing, and that's where Sigourney Weaver dies at the end. I just conflated the two movies, combined them into one. Well, not really. I just remembered the Ron Perlman crew and then pretty much the plot of Alien 3.
Yeah.
So my defending of this film, or at least referencing that I liked it last week, no discussion of this movie quite yet, but I would just like to go back in time for the people that have listened to both and please ignore that guy from last time. I do not stand by those statements.
Yeah, I will add the caveat, if you want to be a jerk about it.
And I do.
For this review, in that I actually like 3. And that being said, I haven't seen 3, I think, since I was in junior high. Because I've enjoyed it, and then I'm sure it's terrible, but I'd like to just keep enjoying it, remembering what I enjoy about it. And I'm sure some parts that will come up as we talk about it. But Alien Resurrection, the fourth of the Alien series, not the best one. And I'm going to go ahead and include Prometheus in that. I would say Prometheus is a whole different level of bad. But if you're just going to take, and right now, we don't know as of this recording, we don't know how it's going to tie Prometheus to the rest of the series. Apparently it's supposed to do that, I guess. But anyway, going by the first four Alien films, the Quadrilogy, as I believe the DVD set is called, it is the worst one by far.
Yeah, agreed. I haven't seen 3 in a bit, but as I was watching 4, remembering all the spots that I liked from 4 that turned out weren't in the movie, yeah, 3 is much better. So it's like, hey, where's all the good stuff that I recall?
So essentially, and almost by necessity, this one is a fan fiction film. The plot of it is that it's 200 years since the last Alien, since Alien 3, and a government organization, a military organization, has been cloning Ripley in an attempt to get the alien that was embedded in her out. And we are introduced to the 8th version, I guess. She has the number 8 tattoo on her.
Correct. Yeah, she is the 8. Yeah.
She has been the most successful and can absolutely remember anything about being Ripley for some reason. So they harvest the alien from her. They keep her around this ragtag group of marauders, smugglers.
Yeah.
Show up to deliver some cargo, which we'll get to that in a moment.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the aliens break out. All hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
Alien movie. Featuring Winona Ryder and Ron Perlman, Brad Dourif, Dan Hedaya.
The bad guy from The Crow. That guy from City of Lost Children, whatever his name is.
The fish-faced French guy. Yeah. And directed by the director of City of Lost Children, Jean-Pierre Jeunet. Director of City of the Lost Children, Amelie, Delicatessen.
What's interesting, not so much interesting, but it's something that I will add right here, is Amelie and City of Lost Children, two of my favorite movies. This one, you'll notice, not one of my favorite movies.
Allegedly, he did not enjoy this movie so much that he refused to make another movie in America.
Good.
So he went on to go make movies like Micmacs, which really is one of the Frenchest movies I've ever seen.
I've never seen that one.
It really let him stretch out and get just as Frenchy as hell. And written by Joss Whedon.
Yes. And also featuring, who's the tall kind of weird guy with the odd accent? Oh, J.E. Friedman.
Eddie Dane.
Okay, so J.E. Friedman is, I got him confused with, who's the guy from part 3 that kind of looks like him? Bald guy.
That's everyone in 3. Charles Dance. No.
Pete Postlewaite.
Oh, yeah.
They're both kind of tall, big-nosed, bald.
I think Pete Postlewaite's that tall.
He comes across as tall.
That's just how British he is.
Yeah, well, that's
to
probably
the
it.
Height.
But anyway, that's why I got confused. So from the background of this, so I was reading some behind-the-scenes stuff, and it turns out that this was just one of those kind of disaster movies where the studio had one idea, the writer had another idea, and the director had a third idea, and none of them coalesced.
At least that's kind of the background story that I read. And I think that that comes across in a lot of the really, I don't even know how to describe the tone of this film.
Alien and Aliens took sort of a B-movie concept and elevated it a bit, and he just drug it right back down. It feels a lot more like a crappy horror movie, and in some ways, a lot like some of the comic book crap that we have now, or where it sort of descended to, where no one ever feels like that. It never feels like anyone's really in any danger. Everyone is just quipping at each other the whole time. Or you know what I mean?
Like, really enough, those are also written by Joss Whedon.
Yeah. And and nothing, there's no real drama. There's no, characters are all just sort of basic archetypes. You look at the Space Marines in Aliens to the crew of the Betty. And somehow, I don't know if it's performances, the director, which I find hard to believe because James Cameron doesn't have human emotions. But like they were more people. They were more human than the crew of the Betty, I think.
Yeah. Well, this is one of those comments from Whedon. He said, like, you know, they used my dialogue, but they just pronounced it all wrong. They directed it all wrong. Like, yeah, this whole run where he describes what went wrong.
Where he blamed everyone but himself, which was pretty impressive.
Yeah, true. But it also, I think he's got a good point because, like, the dialogue is so weird and he writes really good dialogue. And I think they just didn't understand the tone. And I think they were trying to play funny lines straight.
See, I disagree. I felt like that was very Whedon tone. I thought the awful, crappy jokes were delivered awfully crappy.
No, the Whedon humor, I thought, at some point came across, the quips came across instead of humor, but like, I just think some of the dialogue just, it feels like it wasn't done the way that he wrote it. Like, there was just, I don't know, just something felt like stilted or something.
One thing he specifically brought up in it was probably the same interview that we read, we talked about the casting and how somehow the casting of Brad Dourif as the scientist ruined the surprise of the scientist being crazy, which, granted, it's Brad Dourif, so he is right that when you see Brad Dourif in a movie, generally you have an idea of what that character is going to be.
Yeah, he actually, I hate to admit it, but he's got a point there.
I disagree because like the scientist was never, it never really felt like a twist. And I don't think if you cast it as someone else that it would have felt that way.
Oh,
the scientist
pretty, okay,
and again, like I'm not necessarily blaming him because as we said, everyone had a different idea with this movie, but I just don't agree with that point because pretty much right from the get-go, the fact that they're like trying to train aliens, you're like, well, that's terrible and that's not going to go well. The twist that he's like, I'm also really insane about it. Okay, who cares?
Yeah.
It didn't really matter.
Yeah, fair enough. I think I shouldn't have said the twist part. I think it kind of ruined the character turn. And not that it's a character turn, but like there's no character development because the actor is there, that it's like you don't get to watch him kind of move from having a sane exterior to insane. Because you know it's going to happen because he's cast.
I agree that that was his point, but I don't think that happened in the movie. I don't think he ever turned. And I don't blame Brad Dourif for that. I just don't think whatever was never...
It's not like you blame Brad Dourif. Like, he's a great actor. I actually have a note on here. Is by far my favorite That Guy actor.
Yeah.
And may I add, not Andy Serkis, who I get him confused with every fucking time I see him.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah. No, I just more mean like if it was an actor that's more known for like stable roles. I think that weird scene where he's like making out with the glass, which is dumb because that's a guy that's known for doing crazy shit. So if it was like more of like a stable actor, I think that scene would play more like I think Joss imagined it when he wrote it.
Fair enough.
You know, because it's like, well, look at this stoic scientist character is now being fucking bananas.
Yeah.
You know, with an alien. Then it's like carries more weight. Not that it's a big reveal.
Yeah, that's
but it would be a more interesting scene with if they casted someone that you wouldn't. Like, if you saw Brad Dourif in anything, if it's like he's in Tombstone, right? No, he's in
Deadwood.
If at some point in Deadwood he just starts making out with glass with a monster on the other side, I would go, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
totally,
why not?
Totally fits the character, even though it doesn't at all, but it fits him. You know?
It's Powers Booth, not a monster.
Yeah. Starting from the beginning, so I'm watching it and I go, I literally wrote great opening sequence, really gross and creepy. I really like the opening run.
Well, are you talking about like the credit sequence?
Yeah,
also interesting because, so, and this sort of leads to my whole thing about it being a fan film is that, you know, traditionally the alien movies have opened in the darkness of space. And this is this mishmash of these images morphing out of these very kind of Cronenberg looking things.
Yeah.
So instead of going outward, it's inward. And it is, a lot of it is about sort of the cloning of Ripley and the stuff happening inside. It's defying the genre as it was, or defying the alien movies theme as it was, and sort of setting up the whole theme for the whole movie.
Yeah.
Rather than being a space adventure, it's this internal struggle.
Which I actually think it's fine because we're dealing with a part four of the film. So it's like, I'm like, oh, cool, start. Which again,
I agree.
Very, very few compliments in this, in my notepad here, but I really like the opening. And so it's Worlds End, and then it's like, oh, cool, Brad Dourif, isn't it? And then Dan Hedaya, another one of my favorite That Guy actors. I think everybody but the black guy and the quiet lady that's on the Betty.
That did not matter as a character at all?
The quiet lady was, I don't know what was going on with her. And black guy, I don't know any of their names, so sorry.
It was like Christian or something?
I don't know.
Sharpshooter Joe.
Yeah, he was terrible. And I actually wrote down, is he bad at acting or is it just the dialogue so bad that no one can be good? Because, I mean, Ron Perlman's a charisma factory.
Yeah, but he was not great in this. But I think his character was so terrible.
But if a normal man was in that role, would that role be like, holy fuck, it's terrible?
Because yeah.
I kind of liked him, but I think it's just because I like Ron Perlman in pretty much anything he's in.
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
But that whole crew was weird. And especially the black guy, the dialogue with him just didn't work. And that's when I read that interview with Joss. I'm like, yeah, that's probably what he's talking about. Because nothing felt natural on him. And I think that guy was supposed to be like a quippy one-liner guy.
Yeah, because he was a Joss Whedon character. Yeah, that's what they all are.
But he didn't play it as a quippy one-liner guy. He played it as like a serious, like, I'm into knives thing. But I will give him this. I laugh my ass off when they're watching QVC, and that guy goes, this is a great fucking show.
Yeah.
I did.
The cartoony Ricochet bit was a bit like, that's a comic book movie, what we have now.
This is where it starts falling apart for me. And because it's like, oh, introductions are kind of strong, but like the first act to start, okay, like this is introing a movie that might be pretty good. And that part would make me go like, oh no.
We're skipping over a giant thing here before that scene even happens. Basketball. There's a scene where Ripley is playing basketball, because why wouldn't she? You know, we all know from those other movies her huge history of being a mad baller.
That was weird. And okay, the only thing I could think that happened there was that was a studio thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Because
Joss Whedon is not a basketball person.
No.
That had to be a studio note.
But it just felt like that's the kind of, it just hit those notes of being, oh, well, here's this, you know, this quiet badass, not going to say anything. And they're going to show their prowess and their badassness by schooling someone in some non-consequential thing. Let's do it on a basketball court.
Yeah, I mean, and
they probably got a note from the studio that said, be more like Space Jam.
Yeah, and Sigourney Weaver, boy, does she not look natural with a basketball.
But apparently she's made those shots. Like
she did make those shots. Yeah. And sadly, the story of her making that shot behind the back on the first try was apocryphal. That took 30-something tries. And my favorite part of the anecdote of that is Ron Perlman looked at the camera and went, holy shit, she fucking made it! So quickly that they almost couldn't use the take because it was so good. But that was great. But so that scene was awkward. So here's where I realize that this is kind of early Joss Whedon, where he hasn't, I know you're not a fan of his writing, but he's gotten a lot better over the years. And let me quote this part that is so early Whedon, so Buffy era. So one of the jerks is talking to Sigourney Weaver. I forget which one he was. And she's like, you can't teach it to roll over to fetch. You can't teach it to, and the jerk goes, well, why not? We're teaching you.
Right.
Where it's like, oh yeah, men think women are dogs. It's like this ham-handed Joss Whedon thing. I went, oh no. And because I'm still thinking this is the movie I like at this point. So I'm like, yeah, basketball is.
It was a thing that happened.
But like, okay, so
inexplicably.
But that's the scene that made me think this might be the thing. Okay, so that one. Ron Perlman is Adam Baldwin from Firefly.
Yeah, oh, obviously, yeah.
Michael Wincott, he's supposed to be Mal because he's kind of the overtly sexual, but he's joking about it, handsome guy. Knife guy is, I think he's River, weirdly enough. And Winona is.
Wait, which guy is Knife guy?
Oh, Knife Guy's black guy. I just didn't want to call him that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Ricochet Joe.
Yeah. Because it just started to sound racist after a while.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but, you know, well, because what am I going to call him? African American? He's in space.
Or look up his name. Whatever.
I don't want to know the names of the people in this movie. And then Winona Ryder, I think, is the Zoe. I don't know her name. The black lady from Firefly.
Sure.
Who's probably the best actress on there.
Agreed. I would.
The one that's married to witty guy that was
Wash.
Yeah, Wash. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm like, oh, look, they're setting up the Betty as like, not setting up as Firefly, but it's like, oh, look, these are early Joss Whedon tones. And I like Joss Whedon. So it's like, okay, this is going to be good. And I can tell you the exact point that this movie turned for me. I'm going to put a cube of scotch and then shoot a laser at it to turn it to scotch. Because you know what's more efficient than that? Just having scotch.
Anything.
Because scotch doesn't go bad. You don't need to save it in cube form to put it in space. Because you know what liquids do? They fill the space they're in. You know what cubes don't? They don't do that. Oh God, that annoyed the shit out of me.
Yeah, that was a weird little, again, sort of this lowering of the tone, for lack of a better phrase, this sort of dropping it down to a B-movie thing where it's like, oh, look, but the space and the future, whatever, whereas the Alien films have been very utilitarian.
Yeah, lived in.
Yeah. And that was the whole idea behind the first one, is let's not make the Star Wars fancy future. Let's make something that looks like people actually function in it.
Yeah.
And so having laser scotch seems weird.
And this is where the tone thing starts to get weird, because at this point, we're still like, basketball scene aside and scotch aside, I'm still living in a movie that's like, oh, this has potential. There's still, all right, I've been introduced to a wide variety of characters, really good actors. Like, this movie's packed with people that are good at acting. You wouldn't know it from watching the movie, but there's a lot of talent in this movie.
It's like a prequel, like one of the prequel movies. Like, yeah, you got Liam Neeson.
Yeah, this, you know, yeah, all the talent in the world wasn't going to save this piece of shit. Then they cut the ship exterior, and it is the most modelly looking ship model I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
That first exterior shot, the space shot, looks like shit. And it makes me think, like, oh, is this purposeful? Like, this is where the tone starts to get weird with me. It's like, all right, this basketball thing, the whole, like, is this supposed to be wacky, self-referential B-movie stuff? Like, is this a Starship Trooper style spoof? But, you know, and then there's a lot of, like, kind of, like, more serious, and that's where I'm starting to get, like, this is starting to go a little south for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it tried to do that kind of, I don't want to say wacky, but a more, like, lighthearted tone and more, like, action movie thing. But part of the problem is that there wasn't really any danger. Like, the aliens get out, and then that's kind of it. There's not a whole lot of interaction with the aliens. They're not this real scary force. They get talked about, they're running away from them, but really the only interaction they have with them is the underwater chase scene.
Yeah.
Which was kind of interesting, but also just all that happened was Ron Perlman shot a grenade at a thing, and then it blew up, and then that one lady fell back in.
Ultimately,
there wasn't a whole lot. It was more like them, just like the fighting between them, the fighting against the government, and not a whole lot of alien stuff.
Yeah, so before we even jump to that.
Oh, you want to talk about how hairy Dan Hedaya's shoulders are? Because that was upsetting.
I actually made a note of that. Also, that the awkward comedy beats with Dan Hedaya, because every time he shows up, it's kind of like a blop, 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 blop.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is weird.
That felt very Whedon-y, of like this authority figure that, like, whoa, I'm an idiot. Like, that feels like a thing, a bell that's been rung with him several times.
But his other films, that fits tonally. Like, this so far is a... I mean, maybe I shouldn't say it. Maybe it's just I feel like the tone is more serious because I've watched the three previous movies.
Mm.
So him being like wacky, because his other, like, all of his stuff has a certain wacky element, and this one doesn't like introduce it yet. So all of his like comedy parts are awkward. But John, how do you feel about how the aliens got loose?
Pretty bad. They made you go like, oh, the aliens can learn, because the Brad Dourif hits him with steam and he goes, I don't like that. And then because they can learn, they know that their blood is acid and can eat through things. And I don't know. All of a sudden it just kind of was like, yes, we know how to do this now.
Now you bring up a fine point. However, I believe you are a bit of a simp for not realizing the main point of this. Why is the floor not made of the acid proof glass that the glass is made of?
Mm.
They're keeping an acid creature in a room with floor that is melted with acid. Now keep in mind, this acid creature also can spit acid.
Right. That's a new thing.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And very badly done.
The
effects of that were wonderful.
But they keep it in a thing where the floor will be eaten away. That's shockingly dumb. Yeah. And not in like the people in this movie are dumb. That's just really dumb, like writing-wise.
That's the government for you.
I mean, I don't...
Vote yes on Prop 12.
Why did he make out with the glass?
Because he loved the alien. It's basically, it was the shorthand of Ash in the first one. It was the... Ash being like, this is the perfect specimen. This is the perfect biological organism.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah. And it was them just like, no, he wants to kiss it because it's great.
Yeah.
And then I'll get into the queen a little bit later. But that whole sequence, that is clearly a whole bunch of people throwing ideas at a thing. They removed the queen from Sigourney Weaver. It has grown big. And for some reason, so it has given Sigourney Weaver the power. Like, their DNA has mixed because of the cloning. It has given Sigourney Weaver the power of knowing that there are aliens around. And then in turn, she has given it the power of having a womb. Even though it's laid a crap ton of eggs already, it also has a womb.
I was confused by that as well. I want to take a step back here. I think it's just because it's in a dumb movie that we're I think that's actually not that big of a deal. I think that's she's getting cloned. Like,
yeah,
in
no,
context
it's fine.
Of the science, it's
I'm
fine.
Just making sure I'm clear on.
Yeah, yeah, no, because in context of the science, like, it's fine. It's such a shit movie that that actually sticks out even worse. But like, if this was a good movie, I don't think that's anything to really focus on. Well, it's just, you know, when you're piling up the list of horrors, like, yeah,
well, and that's the thing that bothered me about it. Because so the thing I think about baby ducks imprinting, because the life form, I don't know what they even call it in the movie, but there's the sort of hybrid alien, weird human thing pops out of the womb. And then doesn't recognize the queen as its mother, but recognizes Sigourney Weaver as its mother.
Well, I think the idea there was, and this is very much not done well, is that, and it's referenced in more interviews, but the Joss's original thing was, there was going to be a sequel where it's Sigourney Weaver wrestling with her humanity versus her alienity. And that, you know, the alien kind of thing will start winning out, and she almost is going to be like the villain in the next piece. I think what the idea was is that she's a human with the alien stuff trying to come out, and that's an alien with human stuff trying to come out. So it's not more human than alien, but the human side was showing itself. So it went immediately to Sigourney because it was more human-like.
Well, and that's the thing, sort of talking about tone again, is that so this thing pops out and it's supposed to be this great horror, and you kind of feel bad for it.
Exactly.
Because it is like it's having these sad expressions, and it's basically just, what am I doing here? Please kill me.
Puppy dog eyes, like, I think it might be the worst creature design I've ever seen. And the puppeteering is brilliant. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really well done, but the design of that thing is shit on toast. Like, it's that nose thing. It looks wrong. Like, it's not scary enough to be scary. It's not human enough to be human. It's very much like this movie. It's the tone. It's just like, he didn't choose one way or the other.
Well, it's that, like, nothing was built up to it. So all of a sudden I'm confronted with this thing that I have really mixed emotions about. It's giving birth to this queen. It's this creepy hybrid. It immediately murders the queen. She's like, oh my God, this thing's so powerful, whatever. And then it looks like sad and confused. And when they finally dispatch it at the end, it looks betrayed and scared.
Yeah.
And the whole movie has just been this B movie, just nothing. And all of a sudden I'm confronted with this and it doesn't really fit.
Let me mansplain to you this movie.
Please do.
What it was supposed to be. And again, I don't know where the fault went, and it's a lot of, I know Joss's later writing, and I kind of want to defend him a little bit, because I think a lot of this was, obviously there's some fault of his, and probably a significant point, but I think the themes that were supposed to be developed were what it means to be human. So you've got Winona Ryder is very human, you know, spoiler alert, that turns out she's a synth.
Sure.
And her struggling with her, like, she when she goes, I'm disgusting, which is a really cool scene, where referring to herself as how disgusting she is because she's a self-aware robot, and how she feels empty every time she, like, connects to a computer. I thought those were actually really effective. Like, I'm like, oh, that would be really cool if this was in a better movie. And then it's Sigourney Weaver dealing with her alien nature, and that's why those two bonded. And then it's supposed to be the human hybrid alien dealing with being some, like, partially human and alien. So those are the themes it's supposed to be kind of meditating on. However, I don't know what it was, but it certainly wasn't that. Like, yeah, I picked up on that, but it's not there nearly enough.
They're so just glossed over.
Yeah.
They're so just like, oh, and she's an android. Okay. And then this is convenient to the plot to move this forward, and we're moving on.
Because there was a couple spots there. And poor Winona, because she was trying her darling little heart out. Like, there was nothing for her to do in this. I mean, there was some cool dialogue, but it's like, it's in the middle of nothing. It's like, tonally, what can you do? And I thought she hit it as well as possible. And I thought Sigourney Weaver did a really great job if it was in a better movie. Like, I liked her in it.
She's not bad. Quick question. Why is she always damp? This entire movie, she's just damp.
I think that's supposed to be a reference to her kind of being alien.
I guess. I don't know. I just started thinking about it. I'm like, is it hot in there? No one else is that sweaty.
Well, because the aliens are always like dripping with weird, like they're drippy and. That's my only thought was when it was something along those lines. Oh yeah. So Winona Ryder, I really like the bit where her refusing to connect to the computer because she makes her feel empty. I was like, oh wow, that's really cool. Like, you don't hear that. It was like a really nice point. I'm like, man, if the rest of this movie got that tone, this would be interesting, but it's not. So I think we're at about this part of the movie. Here's one of the few action parts I liked. Sigourney Weaver shooting through bad guy from the crow going up from under the floor.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was a cool action beat.
Well, that felt very Whedon-y.
In a good way for me, because I was like...
Yeah, oh. I'm not using that time. I'm not using it as a...
Yeah. And then, oh, here's my point, is Dreadlock's terrible at acting. Something about him makes me awkward, because he's just... And then I asked, but what is J.E. Friedman's accent? Because he's got, like, a New York kind of Jew accent.
Yeah, it's New York-y, yeah.
But this is 400 years in the future, yeah. And the Earth is destroyed.
Yeah, but they're also whistling the theme from Popeye and playing basketball. So, whatever.
You know, I'm... Oh, you know what? I just realized they play basketball in Firefly.
Yeah. Well,
that's like a whole scene in Firefly. I just realized it actually is directly in that show. Oh, God.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I can't, like, it's the same thing I always laugh about in Star Trek The Next Generation, how they still care so much about 20th century baseball. That gets brought up a lot in Next Generation and DS9.
Well, DS9 is 21st century baseball because it's the London Knights.
Right. Well, okay. Great. But you know what I mean? It's always like a reference to the 20th century and famous 20th century comedian or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, this is the touch point. So whatever. But it's still, when the guy was whistling the Popeye theme, I was like, really?
I'm all right with that just because.
No, it was not a big deal. It made me think about Star Trek.
It's not got like a sore thumb. So frankly, it shouldn't be there. But I mean, frankly, I'm just looking for anything in the movie to like, because this movie took a lot out of me.
Yeah.
I
was excited when I looked that it wasn't 2 hours. Going into it, I'm like, oh, sweet.
Yeah.
This was before all the movies were 2.5 hours long, and it still felt endless.
It did feel long. 90 minutes in, and I go, oh, shit, that's Tuco.
Yes. Yeah, Raymond Cruz.
90 Cruz. Minutes it took me
Raymond
in
Cruz.
Before I went, oh, shit, that's Tuco. Like,
yeah.
I don't know why. At that point, I was just kind of like, oh, please, just something.
Well, it's funny because he... The only other movie I think I've seen him in is Training Day, where he plays like a mean Latino gangster guy. So it's largely the same coiled intensity and rage. And it's weird to see that actor not doing that. Although, again, he just a character that was just thrown on there. Which brings me to Leland Orser, I think is the guy's name. The guy with glasses. They find...
the guy with the symbiote?
The guy with the symbiote inside him.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay, let's get that. So they were paid... The crew of the Betty was paid by the government to deliver bodies to them?
To test subjects.
So that... I guess I was just kind of confused by that because that seems like an extra step.
I know. I think the idea is that...
Plausible deniability?
No. What the deal is this. So the what's the name of the company?
Weyland-Yutani.
Thank you. The Weyland Smithers company, they are sending out people to mine in a colony. So they send out people that they know, I guess, won't be missed because they're like miners or whatever. And then they pay pirates to rob the to hijack the ship.
Well, I was largely under the impression that Weyland-Yutani didn't really exist anymore. Did I miss that? Because like there's a reference to...
Oh, I thought...
Because they're the military, and I could be wrong, but I thought there was a line of dialogue that just kind of like threw away like, oh yeah, this company, remember them?
You know, I may have just put that in there, but either way. Right,
which added to my sort of fan theory.
Instead of Weyland Smithers, it's the government, but the idea is that they're sending them out to a colony, then they're paying the pirates to hijack the ship and give them while they're still in stasis, and I guess so the government can go, oh, the ship exploded or whatever, and, you know, so they don't have to, like, fill out any paperwork. It's just, you know, it's an easy way to get bodies without anybody noticing.
Which is sort of a weird thing, because I understand that clearly I'm not meant to feel strong feelings about the crew of the Betty, because they're all fairly insufferable in different ways. But so they're into trafficking human bodies. That's not really endearing.
You bring up a good point there. I guess I didn't really spend any time thinking about that. But yeah, you're right. They are essentially slavers.
Yeah. If not slavers, slave delivery systems.
Well, yeah. They're selling humans. Yeah. Yeah. That's they are pretty terrible.
Yeah. But I mean, I didn't need that to make me not like them. That just didn't help.
I found Ron Perlman. He was okay. And Wheelchair Guy was okay.
Wheelchair Guy was okay. Again, I think for me, bolstered by previously liking them.
Yeah, you're probably right. I think I'm just desperately trying
and I
to
also,
find
well, yeah, and I think that the French guy, you're like, you don't belong here.
Yeah.
Like, you should be somewhere else. Just, oh, please do good. But so Leland Orser, he's a fantastic actor. He's a fantastic that guy actor. He was great in Seven as the victim of lust. He wore the knife dildo in that movie.
Oh, that was that guy?
That was that guy.
Oh, I didn't put that together.
And he's in this movie Faults, which is not very good, but he's very good in it. But they find him and he's just some poor jamoke that has an alien in him. And he joins their team to try to get out of the ship.
Which was, again, sorry, continue.
Well, just that. Like, it was just like this other additional character, this ticking time bomb that was there, like a guy with a zombie bite that they don't kill for some reason, because they have humanity, I guess. He's there to, you know, throw in some quips because there's clearly not enough of those. And then he dies in the dumbest way. So the chest burster thing is happening, and he's Jay Friedman, the evil tough guy scientist, shows up, has them all at gunpoint, and the chest burster starts coming out of him, and he's starts to shake and stuff like that. And then jumps up and runs at J.E. Friedman, and somehow being about to die gives him superhuman strength to punch the hell out of J.E. Friedman and then hold his head and have the chest burster go through his head. That's what happened, right? I didn't imagine that.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. I really liked it. I do look, I'm not defending it, but it was at this point I was just, I found that so amusing. It's dumb as fuck. Like, there's no, but this movie was irredeemable.
If
this point.
Well, see, I'm the opposite. If that had happened in the first half hour, I might have been like, okay.
Yeah.
But I was so just tired.
Yeah,
by this
I was
point.
Just going the other way. I was just, I wanted something to happen so bad. So it's just like, oh, I was so. I was desperate for something, and that just made me laugh.
It was clearly played to be funny or like a, yeah, stick it to the man kind of thing, but it just was so, it was done so awkwardly. Just the way it was framed, like him like lurching at the camera in a way that wasn't terrifying or enjoyable.
One more amazing scene. Sorry, I actually have a point that this is probably the best thing that's ever happened in any movie ever. Can you guess what? And literally, I put
Dan Hedaya's shoulder hair.
Second best scene in any movie ever. Okay. Ron Perlman surviving, swinging backwards from his knees on a ladder.
God.
Shooting back. Okay. But you have no idea how much I laugh when he gives like a girlish yelp when there's a spider in a spider web in front of him at the end.
Yeah.
And then he shoots it.
Yeah.
I was like, that is my favorite thing that's ever happened. Like, if there could be an animated GIF of that, that could just go on. I probably said that wrong, but it just go on and on forever and ever. I laughed so fucking hard at that take. I mean, at this point, again, I'm just desperate for something to happen that I like, but that him going, to the spider and then shooting it just made me really happy.
Yeah. It didn't do it for me. That was just, it just felt so forced. And again, like sort of Whedon-y in that. Here's this pointlessly comic booky actiony thing, and then let's add some humor to it. I don't know. It just did. I think in any other movie it wouldn't have bothered me so much, but because it was an alien movie, I was irritated by it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I found it terrifically amusing. But the other thing, and actually did have another point. I actually liked the 1-7 scene. I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, where she encounters her other clones.
Yeah,
that was interesting. I kind of wanted more with that. Not that, I mean, that scene itself, not that like her constantly finding discarded clones of her, but I felt like more could have been done with that as a theme, that like the her and her alienness.
Yeah.
And whatever, since the movie was going to be focused, you know, seemingly focused more inward than the actual threat of aliens, it just seemed like that happened rather quickly and was just dispatched rather quickly, and we're moving on.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is a sparkle in a stream of shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked that scene. I thought the design of the failed experiments were really cool. However, you find your clone that's still alive, like on a bed through an IVs, and she whispers to you, "Kill me."
Mm-hmm.
Setting it on fire is not the most humane way of killing someone, is my thought there.
No, but I mean,
like a nice bullet to the head would be good, like not setting it on fire.
Yeah, but that's, you know, like rough. I would totally set a clone of myself on fire. Because you're like, if you murder a clone, like you're, no jury in the world is going to convict you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And just full of self-loathing, you just have an alien queen that's the cause of all this nonsense. You want to take it out on you. So set them on fire. That's what I say.
Fair enough.
Burn them all.
Speaking of that. All right. So 1-7 sequence I liked, other than the burning thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where did they get the DNA for her that has the alien in it?
From the pool of liquid of lava.
Are
yeah, no,
joking?
It doesn't make,
that,
no,
okay.
Yeah, no, I'm joking. It doesn't make any, like, I don't know
no,
where
that's
they
the
would
thing,
have gotten
because it doesn't make sense. I thought, did they just.
Hair follicles left on the sleeping bed of the ship. That they crashed onto the prison planet. Law and Order, SVU, aliens.
But wait, she...
Wait, no, it's CSI.
But she got infected with the alien. Did she go to sleep after that point?
Nope. Well, no, she was asleep because the thing that's what caused the crash onto the prison planet is that the face hugger that was hiding in the escape pod killed Hicks and Newt and also got her.
Yeah, it still doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, I don't know where they got that. I don't know where they got the DNA.
Also, okay, so...
But it's the future. They don't tell you. So you're just free to guess whatever. I'm going to claim it's from the hospital on the prison planet. They had some blood or some samples from her there, and they just went, perfect.
But when would they have taken it is the problem. Like, she got...
And when she was coalescing, when they were taking care of her.
Oh, I thought she got infected after that.
Nope, she was infected. She's been infected. She's infected the entirety of Alien 3.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I mean, I guess it sort of makes like a small amount
of
sense.
No, but you have to fill that in yourself. Because my initial thing is that, wait, she died in a pool of lava, in a giant vat of lava. I don't know where they got it.
Oh, that's probably why she set her clone on fire, because she only knows that she can die from fire.
That's probably it, yeah.
Yeah.
I am still, that still just was, I credit movies like Looper when it comes to time travel, which I have a lot of problems with the movies, where they're like, they brush off time travel. They say in the dialogue, like, well, let's not talk about that. We could be here all day.
Yeah.
But I was very irritated in this movie when they're like, how come she has her memories? That doesn't make much sense. Like, oh, well, it's a weird thing that happens. And Dan Hedaya even makes fun of that. He's like, oh, yeah, it's a weird thing that happens. And then they just move on. And for some reason in this movie, that irritated me.
Yeah, it was written off a little, like, more. But again, if the movie had decided on a tone and stuck with it, I'd be fine with this.
Right.
Like, if it was a movie where going, hey, you know, that's the way it happens, fine. But this is a movie that's stuck somewhere between serious and parody, and it is.
Well, that's Joss Whedon kind of does that. He likes to just fling you from one emotion to the other.
But usually he does it well. Like, this was just.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll stick with Shane Black for that. Thank you very much.
I think the problem is he didn't direct it, so he just the tone just didn't come across. And again, it's not written well. So I mean, I'm certainly not excusing him from all blame, because there's some Buffy episodes that are like this where it's just like, oh, dude, calm down. But boy, okay. So we're nearing the end here. Here's the last good thing in the movie, and I know it's controversial, but. The sound design of when the alien is getting sucked through the window is fucking awesome.
Actually, I would like to recommend a website, Loot and Bus. They just did a whole thing that's Alien Week there, and they just did a whole thing about the sound design of Alien 3.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. And I fully agree. Like, there's some awesome... And I like the set design in this, too. It's a little... I mean, it's very Genet in that kind of, like, everything is brown and steam is shooting out. There were, like, technically there were some impressive things in this movie.
Yeah. Well, the alien at the end, where he's going through the window, the scream they used was so good.
Oh, because it was really upsetting.
But it was almost human. Like, you could almost hear words in it. I mean, they did that fucking perfectly. Like, you can almost hear it say, oh no, but I don't think it's actually saying it. And again, man, I wish this movie was better, because that would have been fucking great. Yeah. If we just watched a movie where that thing is like almost like a Frankenstein-esque thing, where it's struggling with its humanity versus it being a monster and you know, trying to figure out if it has a soul. And like, you know, some of the tropes I referenced earlier actually worked. And then we saw that thing get sucked out of a window, which was, one, looked badass. That was cool as fuck. And that noise was so fucking good.
You know, kind of going back to tone and whatever... I think one of my big problems with this was Ripley. That, obviously, it's not Ripley. It's a clone of Ripley. But there were so many un-Ripley things that she was doing. Like, her being a badass in Aliens was like showing off that she could run a power loader. And that was like, see, I'm just as good as you. I can do stuff. And then when time came to it, getting a gun. But like, you see the whole thing of Hicks teaching her how to shoot, all that stuff. This one, she's tearing out an alien's tongue for some reason. And being like, you want a souvenir?
That was weird.
Like, there's just, there. He's,
yeah.
They're trying to make her into this, like, Johnny Explosion walk away badass.
Yeah.
That does not feel like Ripley at all. It just feels like this other character. And I understand that it's supposed to somewhat be another character, but you still want her to be Ripley. And that, that did not land for me at all.
Well, I think what happened there is lazy writing on Joss's part is that this was originally written to be Newt. Was the main character. It wasn't supposed to be Ripley. It was supposed to be Newt was the star of this movie, which is why they hired Joss. because a young badass girl
right,
who was supposed to have part alien blood, it was supposed to be like and a Buffy kind of thing.
Eventually make out with another girl for feminism.
Exactly.
Yep.
But I think some of that stuff got through too many drafts. And yeah. I think a lot of it that would make sense if it was a young badass girl with superpowers, not this lady that we've lived with for three movies already. And
I would have granted that. I would have been a little bit more on board with that if it was, again, like it would have felt like the fan fiction-y thing, but it wouldn't have been like, well, this isn't the character that we've known.
No. So we're hanging out at the end of the movie, and this is where I think a lot of it, it was so off the rails. I don't think I've really processed how dumb it was. So they plotted a course to crash land in the atmosphere. Is that what happened?
They plotted a course to crash land the ship into Earth. It didn't make sense to me because it seemed like they were plotting a course to crash it. Because they said crash it, but not like it'll burn up in the atmosphere.
Well, because it exploded, but it looked like it exploded before it hit the Earth. But also beyond that, one, I don't know why you wouldn't just aim at the moon, because that's right there. But two, aren't there people on the Earth?
Yes.
So why would you think that's a good thing to do?
Because it landed in a place where some of those people were, the less good people.
Huh. Like London?
Yep. Big, Joss Whedon hates the English. Big Scottish fan.
Yeah, he's Scottish-Irish, he's ginger,
Right. I don't know, because I think, like I said, it's unclear whether the thing burned up in the atmosphere. With a ship that size, that seems kind of...
What they did, they exploded. It was like a nuclear explosion.
Right.
It was what was shown and kind of the noise, but it seemed like it impacted the atmosphere instead of the planet. But either way, they made a reference, I don't remember if it was in the movie or the articles, that the Earth was destroyed.
Earth wasn't destroyed.
Well, I think it was supposed to be, because that's why Winona said, I didn't expect it to be, when she said the Earth is beautiful. And they said, and she goes, I didn't expect it to be. Because either in the movie or I guess it was in one of the articles I was reading, apparently the Earth was destroyed. Or ruined in some way.
Yes.
And that's because if that wasn't in the movie, it was in the article. Why would that dialogue still be there? Why would Winona go, I didn't expect it to be?
Who knows? I mean, there's some of those articles that I read, were saying that Jean-Pierre Jeunet didn't speak English.
He didn't.
During the making of this movie, which I'm sure that clearly shows.
But so there originally, the original endings, there's a bunch of different endings. And they all were around the fact that they wanted to land on Earth and have the final act be on Earth with aliens there. And Sigourney Weaver refused the sequel that was going to be on Earth because she said, well, I just don't want to see it with aliens in a hayfield or something like that. It just kind of ruins everything. And I went, that's the best thing I've ever heard an actress say ever. God bless you.
I think that's pretty great. Because I granted, I have not seen the Alien versus Predators movie. Any of those.
I have.
Yeah. Are they in a hayfield and does that work?
Are there two of them?
There's two of them.
They're in a pyramid in Antarctica.
That was the first one. I think in the second one, I think they go stateside.
Okay, I've only seen the first one then, and it was totally watchable in a if you accept the fact you're about to watch a movie called Alien versus Predator,
right.
It's terrific fun. It is in no way a serious or you have to walk into it under the auspice of this is going to be two universal.
You're basically
monsters.
Going to watch a video game.
Yeah. Very, very watchable in that sense. But this movie sucked, John.
Yeah, it's not good.
I I'm not going to apologize to you having made you watch it because we did need to watch a movie for this. But I'm slightly sorry this happened I truly thought this was going to be an episode where I was going to go in and go, I fucking love this movie. And boy, was this not part three. I really wanted to like it, and it just very quickly showed itself to be nothing that I could really take home.
It sort of felt like I would not be surprised if you had made this up. If this was actually the case, and you told me this, I would fully believe you. With Hellraiser, series of movies that went downhill really quick, the last one, the one that just came out, they made simply because the studio needed to make something in order to retain the rights to the franchise.
Oh, like the Corman Fantastic Four.
Basically. Yeah. And so if you had told me that that's why this alien movie got made, I would 100% believe you.
Yeah, it's weird. And the thing is, it looks like it was expensive for the time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Like it looked like... did you look up... Was this a flop in the box office?
I don't think it did that great.
Because I know it's universally panned, because of the new Aliens coming out very soon, or already came out, there's a lot of articles about this movie and saying how much it sucks and how it's universally reviled. And yeah, I didn't look into what it did in the box office. I don't remember it being known as this shitty when it came out.
I don't remember it being like well loved when it came out, but
yeah, but it wasn't one of those like it immediately was known as like this flop, you know, because sometimes those come out and you're just like, it's just known to be this garbage fire. But because I remember the toys did well. I remember the queen with a vagina toy that McFarlane made was quite cool. I think I may have even owned it.
It had a vagina?
We did the vagina queen from the movie. Like the one with the womb, I guess. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I shouldn't say vagina. It's a womb. Yeah.
It debuted in number 2 at the box office behind Flubber.
Well, Flubber was a huge movie.
Yeah, and its first 5 days, 60 million over the weekend for an average of whatever. It's the least successful of the Alien series on the North American continent. It was well received internationally. So that's the way most movies work now.
Wait, 60 million over the first weekend?
47.7 million in, that's just total. That's total. 16 million over the first weekend.
What does it say what it was made for? Because in back then money, this was probably a successful, it did well.
With a gross of 113.5 million.
Yeah, and this was probably made for what, back in that day money, 40 million maybe?
Yeah, maybe. It's
50 million.
I'm seeing 70 million.
Oh, oops. Because I looked in Alien 3 again because I desperately
just want it to be
70 million. So, it did really well. Yeah. When all is said and done, it made 46 million.
Sure. If you want to do math about it.
Not bad. I mean, you can see why they made more, you know, later.
Well,
it got $3 of my money.
10 years later, I think. When did Prometheus come out? At least 10 years later, because they haven't really. I mean, other than the Alien versus Predator movie, you haven't seen another Alien movie since that one.
Yeah, there's Alien versus Predator. Yeah. But there's also Alien versus Predator.
Right.
And Predators, which has nothing to do with Alien.
Oh.
Yeah.
Let's not watch that one. Have you seen that one?
I saw that in the theater.
Yeah, so I saw it at a second run theater, and yeah. I fell asleep, and missed the entire Lawrence Fishburne bit. I fell asleep right when he showed up, and I woke up right when they dispatched him.
Yeah, you didn't miss much.
It had to be better than anything else, but...
Yeah, it wasn't... it was a totally watchable movie, again, in a this-is-just-cheesy part.
My favorite part is Adrian Brody being a tough guy. I weigh 90 odd pounds, really weird. But I'm going to talk
really,
like this.
Really awkward. Oh,
I hate that guy.
So let me ask you a question that I've been struggling with since I've watched this movie.
Yes.
Oh, wait, this is going to be a side. Do you have anything else on the actual movie?
No, not really. All right. Think it's not good.
Yeah, that's the take home. Michael Wincott, bad guy from The Crow.
Hell yeah. Top dollar.
What other, there's another movie, or did we not discuss him at some point on this show or the Alex cast? Was he?
Yeah, no, I think it got brought up with something.
But was he in one of the movies we've lambasted?
No, he might have still gotten brought up.
Okay. I think, because for some reason I thought he was, because then I just realized he's in Westworld, and I'm like, this guy might
be. He's in Westworld?
He plays Old Bill.
Oh, yeah, the second android, the one that they never bothered to make any. They kept the first android forever, but that one they just, no, we don't need to do that, we'll just leave him old and hang out with
I think, I don't know, it just says old. Well, I was just looking at his IMDb.
It's the guy that drinks whiskey with Anthony.
That's right,
Hopkins.
That's what I think. Yeah. That is, yeah, because I just saw he was in that. It was like, oh weird, this guy's kind of haunting us. But I guess he was on late for some reason. I was thinking he may have been in that that Steven Seagal movie.
He got brought up. I don't know if it was just in reference to The Crow or
yeah,
what,
maybe,
this does make me excited for this does make me excited for Alien Covenant, which I'm actually seeing tomorrow. So,
oh really?
Okay. Well, yeah. I just figure it can't be this bad. Prometheus is worse, but I, like I said, I don't really count it as it's tangential to the Alien thing.
Yeah.
Or as Joss Whedon said in an interview, pro meaningless.
Yeah.
Blah. He gets paid money.
Well, Joss Whedon, I compare him to Hemingway, and not ability, but in he's a shitty person that I like his art. I don't. Yeah, Joss is irritating. I don't follow him on Twitter. I don't want to know his opinion.
No, I know. That's what sucks about this age is that like there's so many people that like I liked and then like you see them on Twitter or something.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh gosh. Like I don't even want to get into it. But yeah, there have been several people that I'm like, I actively like your work, and then like I see them on Twitter and I can't shake that knowing these things about them, you know.
Yeah, I'm good at drawing that line because there's a lot of just
like Fatty Arbuckle's ruined for me forever.
Alien. Yeah, I think that's everything in the movie. Yeah, I mean, I can't stress enough how much I wish this was part three. And am I going to say that I would like part three? I just really wish this was it, because that's what I thought we were going to watch. I almost wish we were watching it together, because I was like kind of like slowly beating myself up as the movie just kept not being that one. And just going, this is what's happening here.
Yeah, it was interminable.
Those model shots are fucking terrible.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's an interesting thing with CG, particularly that era of it not holding up. I mean, even you look at some of the Lord of the Rings movies and you can really see the green screening and the flaws of just, you know, how far we've come in terms of effects. Oh, really? For movies.
I haven't watched. I mean, this one definitely.
This one is way worse than Lord of the Rings.
There was an alien running sequence that just looks so fucking CG.
Yeah, there's a thing where it's jumping onto the escape pod. It looked like you should have just been stop motion at that point.
Oh, and by the way, did Dan Hedaya get away? He got off on the
No, he gets in a amazingly cartoonish bit. He gets hit in the back of the head with one of the aliens.
Oh, that's right.
And then he like pulls out the back of his head and is like, uh-oh, and dies.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, because I was trying to remember what happened to him. And yes, that was the ba-da-ba-ba-da. Yeah.
Oof. That was so bad.
Yeah, pretty terrible. I think we did it.
We did it, you guys.
Alien Resurrection. All right, so now that we've successfully solved the riddle that is Alien Resurrection, a.k.a. Covenant, a.k.a. Part 3... we must say what we're going to do next episode. And I think because this is something so near and dear to your heart, why don't you tell the audience what we're going to be watching for next episode?
We're going to watch The Fifth Element.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to watch The Motherfucking Fifth Element.
I hate this movie so much.
It is one of the best movies ever made. And I'm not saying that sarcastically. I fucking love this movie. And I said this last time as well. I'm walking into this, and I'm going to make some predictions here. Uh-huh. I said that the bit at the beginning with Luke Perry, or I think that's his name, is dumb, and I love the rest of the movie.
Okay.
I want these words to hold true the next time this
movie. See, I'm actually terrified I'm going to like it. I'm terrified I'm going to watch it and be like, oh, you know what?
Well, you know,
the stuff I hate about it, so I can't imagine that's going to change.
Because here's the backstory for the audience. The Fifth Element is a movie that by every single bit of rubric, by everything I know about John, he should love this movie. If you wrote down the things, it would be this movie. For some reason, John hates it. Yeah. It is so over the top and dumb and just, it is.
Yep. And top of that list is of things that I should like is Chris Tucker yelling.
Well, I'm not saying he's the whole movie, but you know, it's as far as like kind of a genre parody weird thing. I mean, it is so odd. It's so fun.
That might actually be why I hate it so much. We don't know. We'll find out next time.
Yeah. So tune in next time to John and Alex Hate Stuff, in which John and Alex hate stuff.
Don't make me do this in vain.
You know what I'm going to try to make you do? I'm just going to try to make the next episode. It's going to be green. It's going to be super green. It's going to be so green. Yo, Crystal.
I quit. Walking away.